ओम ज्ञानति निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Someone asked me, a devotee asked me, a question which I'll attempt to address now with some other issues. Guru issues, big issues within ISKCON. The question was, how should we respond if a devotee, especially a senior devotee, criticizes our guru? Note the clause, especially a senior devotee. The implication was that, well, we don't like it, but if it's a senior devotee, then we have to take it seriously, or we have to listen. You can't just override a senior devotee. As with many of these how-to questions, it's a general question, so it's very difficult to give a specific answer specific to the situation. What's he saying, first of all? What's the senior devotee saying? We should first of all see, is it according to guru, sadhu, and shastra? If you criticize your guru because some minor thing that he doesn't know how to cook chapatis properly, well, that might be a fact. And it might not even be a criticism, it might be just an observation. I'm not sure if I could cook chapatis properly. It's been a long time since I cooked. I used to cook good chapatis, but it's been a long time. Probably takes some time to get back in practice. different factors. Is it actually in a critical tone? What is the motive? What is your relationship with that devotee that he's speaking to you like this? You could ask the devotee, why are you saying this? Because naturally, a disciple, they want to keep their faith in their guru. It's the cornerstone of spiritual life. So there could be various responses that it depends very much on the individual and the context. But yeah, you have to see if it's a valid criticism according to guru, sadhu, and shastra. That means, is the guru speaking? Is the person who's being criticized speaking according to guru, sadhu, and shastra? Is he acting according to guru, sadhu, and shastra? If there's some serious deviation in that, then that should address. That should probably be addressed publicly. Because a guru is a public person, and everything he does is public. Therefore, Sanyasira Alpa Chidra Sarva Loke Gai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that even the small chidra literally means a hole. Even a small gap in the proper behavior of a sannyasi, everyone will talk about it because it's not expected. Guru is supposed to be, guru is a representative of God, not supposed to be, is. And is supposed to behave in a way that upholds that divine position, most prestigious position. So if he doesn't, then, well, it becomes a point of concern. So there may be grounds for that, but on the whole, it's very... There may be grounds for criticism, but on the whole, it's can be a very delicate issue, because the cornerstone of advancement in spiritual life is faith in the guru. On the other hand, it could be said that, well, why uphold faith if there's no grounds for that? There's this Ritvik idea that, well, you just take an initiation directly from Srila Prabhupada, just bypass everyone else. But this is clearly nonsense. I won't go into the details here, but it's clearly a fabrication, concoction, speculation. These are different words that Srila Prabhupada used. But those who promote this, they point out, and they have a point, that seeing so many persons who have accepted the role of guru not fulfilling that properly, and in some cases, in many cases, seriously breaking the rules of Krishna consciousness, well, they'll say, well, that's also nonsense. So what is sense? There should be, if there's nonsense, there should be sense. What makes sense? Should we adhere to a guru even though we know that there's something, or should we encourage people to maintain faith in someone who, by their speaking, not according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, or their acting, not according to Shastra, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, that doesn't inspire our faith, because after all, faith cannot be legislated. We can say that you should have faith in Shastra. Krishna himself says. But he can't. Well, of course, Krishna can. He can do whatever he likes. But he doesn't legislate. He doesn't force that something to be developed. So is it good to have faith in someone who's more or less a devotee, but who doesn't uphold, or who has disappointed us in not upholding the best value, or should we not? Well, it's difficult to maintain, even if you say you should, it's difficult to maintain full faith in someone who we're trying to follow as a role model, but then we find that becomes disappointing. We're disappointed by that. So, how do we find our way through all of this? Well, there has to be faith. There has to be faith. There has to be faith that if we're sincere, Krishna will help us. It's unlikely that we can maintain, if someone has had a, been in a position, sambhavitasya chakyati marana adati richate. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who's been respected, dishonor is worse than death. So what, for one who's been in a position of high respect, but who is later seen not to live up to that, it's very difficult to place full faith there. So, many devotees, they say, well, we should place faith in Prabhupada. And that seems to be, because we have full faith in him. But that seems to be the default position that our movement's moving toward. But one is supposed to have faith not only in the previous acharyas, one is supposed to have a personal guru and guide also. Now, what we do see in our movement is that many devotees, they have a guru, but it's almost as if they don't have, in the sense that they have very little contact with that guru. Of course, most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples had very little personal contact with him. And even those who are considered in the inner circle, they also didn't, most of them, with the exception of very few, didn't have Prabhupada's personal association most of the time. After the first few months of the movement, there were very few devotees who had Srila Prabhupada's personal association on an ongoing, long-term basis, because Srila Prabhupada is always traveling. I've heard it said that a devotee had said to Srila Prabhupada that, "Srila Prabhupada, I always want to remain fixed at your lotus feet." And Srila Prabhupada had quipped back, "Well, that'll be a difficult job because I'm always moving." Of course, it's understood to be fixed at the lotus feet. That is the whole point, that the association is primarily by hearing and following, not by by being personally present. And we see that there were many disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur who had much more personal association with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur than did Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada extracted the essence and brought that forward. So, yeah, when someone those in the position of guru have fallen, that puts a question on the status of all others. Well, maybe they don't fit the description given in Shastra. Sakshad haridvena samasta shastraya uktastata bhavyata eva sadbhi. Kintu prabho yav priya eva tasya vande guru shri charana aravindam. But actually, Krishna, he says that you should know the acharya as good as me. That one who teaches, he is as good as Krishna. One who teaches Krishna's teachings, to be understood as good as Krishna. But different also. Kintu, the word kintu means but. Same and different also. So what should one do if someone, senior devotee, criticizes? Well, again, I can only give a general answer, but you may ask, well, it depends on what the criticism is also. You may ask, well, why are you telling me this? You know, is it something that I need to know? And if me, then why not everyone else also? You could respond like that. Or you may, if find it too disturbing, you may ask the senior devotee to please take that up with your peers and not with me. So there are different ways. Certainly a devotee has to protect himself from hearing that which will impede his spiritual life. But maybe the senior devotee is thinking that you need to hear this to promote your spiritual life. That maybe the senior devotee thinks that your faith in that person is misplaced. So, like I say, these are very delicate issues which have to be seen contextually. One of Srila Prabhupada well, I can't say one of Srila Prabhupada's main instructions. He said it's 50% of his work is to establish Varnashram Dharma. So doing so would go a long way to, should go a long way to solving this, or rectifying this syndrome of devotee fall down. Practically, although initiations are going on, practically we hardly expect, the situation is such that we hardly expect everyone to remain in Krishna consciousness after taking initiation. A devotee recently wrote to me recommending a disciple of mine for Brahminical initiation, which I'm generally quite slow to give. And the devotee said that, well, of course, can't be sure, but then you can't be sure of anyone. And that's true of everyone. So Varnashram is supposed to be a system which helps to, for devotees, that helps to protect against fall down, because Srila Prabhupada wrote in one purport that the main purpose of Varnashram is to protect from illicit sexual connection, which is a major fall down. I was going to say cause of fall down, but it is in and of itself fall down. Most of you are probably not aware of this, but it's big news in India and probably nowhere else, that one of the famous, what they call godmen, which is Indian English for sadhu, has been accused of raping a 16-year-old girl. So that's big news in India. And I don't think in Britain people are, in general, are much concerned. They have their own local concerns. So another, this is one of the big sadhus. There are a few, how many, five or six big sadhus in India. If you, including one sadhvi, if you want to call her a sadhvi, that hugging fisherwoman. So another of the big ones, he came out and said, which is laudable, and you don't hear many godmen saying this kind of thing, so it's especially laudable, that sadhus should not be in close contact with women. They shouldn't be in such a position. There shouldn't be any, as Srila Prabhupada wrote, Caesar's wife should be above suspicion. I'm not sure who said that. Is that a Shakespeare quote? Anyone? Don't know. So it's apt that why should there be even suspicion? If a sadhu is never alone with a woman, then there can be no question of any such accusation. But if he is, then such an accusation can come. I remember one of my godbrothers, Sannyasi. Years ago, there was some accusation of him misbehaving with a woman. And he denied it, and eventually it got forgotten. But there was I said to him that, well, if you're alone, then no one knows. It's her word against yours. And even if you're alone, and even if she doesn't say, no one accuses you, the suspicion will be there. So it's a good point that Baba Ramdev made. An apt point that those who are going to wear saffron cloth, this red cloth, then they shouldn't mix. It doesn't mean they have to be harsh or toward women, but they to uphold their role of teacher, spiritual teacher. They should be. They should not put themselves in a situation where they can be questioned. And that goes also for if we see someone, a devotee who's supposed to be in a position of trust as a spiritual leader, if we see him going away from the ashram alone, dressed in conventional dress, then it could raise questions. Why? What is this? Why is he doing that? Because then you have a license to, in the public eye, you have a license to do anything. Whereas if you're dressed as a devotee, it becomes more difficult or becomes surprising, even in the public eye, for someone dressed as a sadhu to go in a bar or a McDonald's. Or, of course, you may go for selling books, but to go there as a customer, to go in a bar or a brothel or some such thing. And even if you don't have any such intention, the possibility can be there. As our devotees dressed in kami clothes for going and selling books and other things have often found out. I know myself, once I was in kami clothes at night in Amsterdam. I just arrived from Denmark. And I was trying to find the way to the temple, and prostitutes propositioned me. I don't think if I was dressed as in devoted clothes, I would. Another time on a plane, I was dressed in kami clothes because I was going into Malaysia, which we have to enter in kami clothes because it's officially, it's a Muslim government. So this hostess was getting all friendly with me, and air hostess, which quite often happens in Asia, because for an Asian woman to catch a European man is considered a good catch for them. So at one point I just took off my hat to reveal my shaved head and said, "I'm a Hare Krishna devotee." And she took off quickly. So the real thing is how to have sadhus who a real sadhu who don't give them a chance. That's the best thing. Help them by not giving them a chance. Women devotees can keep their distance. Doesn't mean that they don't ever talk, but they should not come into a room if there's a man alone. Best that, especially those who have taken sannyas, they are always in the association of male devotees, at least one. And to establish our strong communities with where all these rules are known and understood. But criticism will be there. Anyway, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was criticized. The ideal sannyasi. He was criticized by his own dear devotee, Damodar Pandit. And you could say it was a valid criticism that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very affectionate to one young boy who would come and visit him every day. And Damodar Pandit pointed out that there's a problem here, because that young boy is the son of a widow, and the widow is young and beautiful. So people may say, "You're also young and beautiful." So people may think that your affection toward this boy is some kind of link, some kind of affection toward that young widow. So it would have been a valid criticism if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wasn't the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But on the other hand, he was acting as a sannyasi. So Damodar Pandit was very concerned too, that people, that Damodar Pandit's concern was that people not criticize Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, non-devotees. So one response to, if a senior devotee criticizes your guru, then someone might point out, his own disciple might point out to the guru, if he has the guts to do so, that, well, maybe you should, something needs a little adjusting, because people will think in the wrong way. It's, that may be there also. Anyway, there are a few thoughts on this, which, as soon as we start talking about guru issues, then it's a whole Pandora's box, but I won't get into so many other topics now, unless anyone has any question about that, or comment, or anything you want to say. And soon we start talking about Varnashram issues also, that's another big one. Yes, please.
Just one comment. Where you have an ISKCON guru who falls down, but then gets back into his Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems that the GBC have made allowances for both types of disciples. On the one hand, you have a disciple who they still continue to take shiksha from their spiritual master. And then on the other hand, then allowance is made if the disciple, if their faith has been broken, then they can take shiksha elsewhere.
Because faith is not legislatable.
So it's an interesting kind of dilemma, I don't know if that's the word, could be. People who may not be so sure as to what side of the fence they should be on, especially if they may not have so much of a relationship with. And I suppose it's just by practicing Krishna consciousness, then it becomes apparent to you like that.
Thank you. So, wanted to say something?
I understood that it's against the etiquette to disturb someone's faith in the guru, no matter what the guru is.
It's against the etiquette to disturb someone's faith in the guru, no matter what the guru is. But then questions of etiquette, they often clash. And practically that's what makes the Mahabharata and Ramayana. Should Rama have done what Dasharath said when Dasharath said, well, don't bother going to the forest, just forget it? Rama, he went anyway because he thought it's better. Now my father is telling me not to go to the forest. But if I don't go, then he will not fulfill his promise to Kaikeyi. So, this is called Dharma Sankat, where there's a clash of rules. And like I said, the whole Mahabharata and Ramayana is full of it. Which option should we choose? The whole Bhagavad Gita is based on that. Arjuna had a duty to fight, but he thought that I shouldn't fight because I have a duty to fight here. But, he had several objections. It's how can I attack my gurus? How can we attack our brothers? How can we leave the, what's going to happen is the world is going to be in such a situation that women are unprotected. So he had several objections. Forget Stephen Covey's win-win. The world isn't like that. So which, in any situation, if there's a clash of considerations of etiquette, then one has to make a decision. And sometimes make the right decision, sometimes make the wrong decision. It can be very difficult to say. Therefore, Krishna says that sarva-arambha hi-doshena. In every endeavor, there's some fault. In every endeavor in this world, you can't avoid it. And Srila Prabhupada gives the example that brahmanas, they may be engaged in sacrifices for killing animals. No, the animal gets revived, but it's painful for the animal when the animal is killed. Another example Srila Prabhupada didn't give there is that which we find Shukracharya, brahmana, lamenting over his position as being a priest. Because as being a priest, he can't maintain his neutrality. He has to, he can't maintain his dignity even properly, although he's being, respected by his disciples in what's a materialistic guru-disciple relationship. Because it's a materialistic relationship, he gets entangled with them on the material platform, and therefore he got in the embarrassing situation below his dignity of having to support his daughter in her clash with his disciple's daughter. So, anything else? Yeah.
Well, I can't remember where I've seen it, but if you try to find a comment on this, it was mentioned. In the observance of a higher injunction, a lower injunction can be overlooked.
Yeah, the observance of a higher injunction, a lower injunction can be overlooked. That's, yeah, that captures it. But that captures the point. That's in Prabhupada's Gita commentary somewhere. But then what's the higher injunction? One has to understand. It's not always easy. Arjuna, he couldn't work it out, which is higher. He thought that to not fight was better than fighting. But Krishna told him, no, you got it wrong. To fight is better than fighting. If Krishna hadn't wanted the fight, then Arjuna's reasoning might have been apt. But because Krishna wanted the fight, then it didn't apply. That was the deciding factor. I guess I can tell that story again, which I've told so many times. But maybe you all haven't heard it. You all know the story of the brahmana who vowed never to tell a lie? Another one? You heard that? Yeah. Well, typically, as in Mahabharata, it's a story within a story. So let's give the meta story first. That Arjuna was fighting during the Battle of Kurukshetra, and he heard that Yudhishthira had been badly wounded. So Arjuna extricated himself from the fight to see if Yudhishthira was okay, because if Yudhishthira died, then it was all over. That was the system. If the king is killed, then the fight's finished. That's all. And then the whole party's lost. the whole party of which the king is the leader, they've lost. Even if their forces greatly outnumber the other forces, if their king is killed, then it's finished. No more fighting. They've lost. So Arjuna went to see Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira was very upset to see Arjuna, because he thought, why do you come to see me? You should be fighting. Why aren't you fighting? And Yudhishthira started chastising Arjuna. He said, well, what's really left to fight? What happened? You're just such a coward. And what do you got that Gandiva bow for anyway? Why don't you just throw it away? And then Arjuna drew his sword and went to kill Yudhishthira. And Krishna, who was there, because Krishna drove Arjuna there, said, what are you doing? I'm going to kill Yudhishthira. Why? Well, I made a vow that if anyone ever tells me to get rid of my Gandiva, I'll kill them. I have to do it. And then Krishna, he told this story, that there was a Brahmin who lived at the edge of a village, next to a forest. In Vedic culture, villages were mostly at the edge of a forest. There's lots of forest. And this Brahmin had made a vow never to tell a lie in his life. One day, as he was outside his cottage, a man came running along in great fear, saying, I'm a merchant, I've got some gold coins, and there are some robbers chasing me. Where can I hide? So the Brahmin pointed, go in the forest over there, hide over there. A few minutes later, a gang came running up and said, we are robbers, we're chasing a man with lots of money. Do you know where he is? And Brahmin said, yeah, he went in the forest just there. So the robbers went there, they killed the man and took the gold, and the Brahmin kept up his vow of never telling a lie in his life, and when the Brahmin died, he went to hell for not telling a lie in that situation. The principle of protecting a person who deserved to be protected is higher than that of not telling a lie, even if you made a vow never to tell a lie. And because he didn't understand this principle of dharma, the Brahmin had to go to hell for maintaining his vow. So Krishna told this to Arjuna. You can break your vow. There's a higher principle. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. Shri Radha Madhava ki jai. Hare Krishna.